Our final speaker is a tremendous hero in my eyes. Deborah White Moon is Oglala Lakota, and she's an author, artist, and activist from the Pine Ridge homeland. She's devoted her adult life to preserving her Lakota way of life, treaty rights, and human rights. She works in all arenas, from the grassroots to the United Nations at Geneva and in New York City. White Plume has engaged in sacred water protection for the past decade. In addition to her well-known battles against uranium mining, she was arrested for trespassing at the White House and also last week on Pine Ridge Reservation for blocking the big, huge trucks trying to build the tar sands pipeline. Dedicated to bringing to every way she can, making us understand the threats posed by this Keystone XL pipeline against the drinking water of the Oglala Lakota Nation, as well as potentially all of us as they try to implement these extreme environmental, extreme energy extractions. And so it's with tremendously honored to present to you Deborah White.
Everybody in a good way. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah?
Okay. My name is Deborah Whitefield. That's my colonized name. I come from the Pine Ridge homelands in southwestern South Dakota. I descend on my father's side from the Deshuta Kioshpai, known in the English language as the Red Cloud family. On my mother's side, I descend from the Northern Cheyenne. Our people, the Lakotas of the Northern Cheyenne, were allies back in the day and were allies today. We were raised as Lakota people, my dad's family, the Red Cloud family. In Lakota, I have a different identity. In Lakota, my identity is Wioea Egnanajimi. That's who I am. And that means stands among the colors of the sun woman. This is my fifth name now at this stage in my life. Through the different stages of our lives, we're given names. And there's meanings that go along with the name change as you grow through your life, not just get older, but as you grow through your life. So I'll have two more names before I go home to the Star Nation. And all this was foretold to me when I was a teenage girl. So the way I live my life is the way of the teachings of the Lakota people. And I'm happy to be here to see all of you people here. I didn't know about the Left Forum or what it stood for, but I've been learning about it. And in our way of life, we have teaching ways to raise our children. Obviously, the first way is through love and human contact, is a teaching way. So, our first identity as an infant. Our second is in Chihuahua, which is your mom and dad, your brothers and sisters, and your brother in your house, Chihuahua. Our third is Teoshpai, which is all the relatives living together, all the Tiwahi living together. It's Teoshpai. From there, our band, the Oglala band, the of the Lakota Nation, when all of the Teochebites come together to form as the Oglalas, that's another identity. When all the bands of the Lakota come together, that's another identity inside the Lakota Nation. Outside of that is Ochenti Shapoi, which is the seven council fires. That's the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota people. That's our sixth identity. Our seventh is our place in the universe. So from birth, we grow this way. And I was sharing with friends last night, my youngest daughter is pregnant right now. She just entered her fourth month of pregnancy. So her husband just completed 3 months of singing to the baby. Now he enters into praying with the baby for 3 months. And then talking with the baby for 3 months before the baby comes here. When baby first moves, we have ceremony called welcoming of the spirit ceremony, the baby first motion. So before we're even born, we're in ceremony. When we come from the Star Nation, we live in our mother's womb. Water is our first home. Water is our first medicine. When baby is born, we put water on baby's mouth. We pray with baby and we bathe baby in sage. All this takes place with water. And that's my work. It's about water. Protecting our sacred water. I stand here 70% made up of water. All of you do. That's why on full moons, some of us were pulled in different directions. It's natural, normal, healthy way to be. So we need water. We need water to live. Now, in the Lakota language, we really describe a lot of things. And the closest I can think of the word for justice, as Teokasin was speaking earlier, there's no real word. The closest thought would be peace in the English language of justice. In ours, and maybe other native languages, so our work is based on preserving our way of life. Away aku means bring back the way. And that's what we work to do because of the colonization of our ancestors and our grandparents, parents, and even in our generation, we've had to fight colonization. And that fight continues even today, even in the registration room. They wanted us to pay to speak here, pay to register here. And somehow everything got straightened out, and here we are. But language is really important. Mia is how you say woman in the Lakota language. We're all the women in here, we're Wea. In Lakota, that means the stone that lives forever. Man is Wechasha, red star. We know we come here from the Star Nation. We know we will return there. Uji Maka is Grandmother Earth. Uji is the oldest dwelling. Maka is my ancestors. Ina Maka, Mother Earth. Ina is breath of life. Maka, my ancestors. You know how a little newborn baby, that's how they cry. They're saying that. They're calling for their mother, my breath of life. That's what they're saying when they cry like that. So language to us is really important, and teaching our philosophy is always a fun time. And, you know, we've been doing this around the world for decades now, to preserve Mother Earth, to preserve our sacred water. So sharing language is one way of doing that. We say, Mani Wichosani, through water there is life. You know, we're at different stages of different battles on the homeland, where we're going to protect our sacred water by fighting the Cameco Corporation, which is based in Canada, one of the world's largest uranium producers. It uses and wastes and contaminates a lot of water, an enormous amount of water, which they're getting from the Ogallala Aquifer, which runs from South Dakota to Texas, the largest aquifer in the United States and one of the largest aquifers in the whole world. So we want to stop them from uranium mining at their one mine, and we're challenging them in their applications for three more mines. We don't want them to mine uranium because it's really radioactive. And it also disturbs arsenic when they're moving that uranium down there using the C2H method, which is just pumping up water attached to the ore, and then they pull it out and dry it and process it and ship it to Canada. We're also opposing the Keystone XL oil pipeline, which is stopped right now, to come from Canada, from Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, to carry this heavy crude that comes from the tar sands oil mine in the Alberta area of Canada, where First Nations people are actually experiencing genocide. They're experiencing genocide because they have nowhere else to live. Their drinking water source is being wasted and contaminated beyond repair. This particular band of First Nations people that lives right there, there's like 1,200 of them. I have more cousins than that. So it's a matter of life and death for their identity, which is what I say for us on Pine Ridge, because our water is pumped in from 200 miles north of where we live, but that KXL oil pipeline will cross it a number of times. And that oil is like peanut butter at room temperature. So it has to be mixed with gas and diesel and water and benzene and a lot of other elements, and then heat it to at least 150 degrees Fahrenheit to get it liquefied enough to slurry through this 2,000 mile pipeline. So if that spills or leaks, which it will in our area on our water, where are we going to get drinking water for 50,000 Ogallala Lakota people? There's nowhere to get that water from. What about our horses? What about our buffalo and our elk and our deer? What about all the food that's grown in that part of the country? So that pipeline is not just about killing First Nations people, raping the boreal forest, which is the Amazon of the north. It provides 80% of the world's drinking water. Yours, yours, mine, yours, yours. That's our water up there in Canada. But the corporations want the tar sands oil that's under it. So they strip the land, literally strip it bare. And then they had to invent equipment to get down in there so deep to get to the tar sands oil. We have some friends who went up there, and this guy stood, he's 6 feet tall, and his head didn't even reach the rim of the tire of one of those vehicles that had to be invented to do this type of mining up there. That's how massive it is. And now when you look from outer space, you can see the oil mine. It's as big as Florida. That's how big it is from outer space. My friends up there, they have a lake 200 miles long, 100 miles wide. That's where they drink from. That's also where the tar sands oil mine gets their water from. It takes them 4 barrels of pristine drinking water to create 1 barrel of this oil. They can't use treated wastewater. They can't use gray water. They have to use pure drinking water. Well, now the old people who live there have been taken to that lake, and they just cried because nowhere in living memory has anybody ever seen the bottom of the lake. But so much water has been pulled out to mine that oil, now they can see the rocks. It's not bank to bank anymore. It's not bank to bank anymore. The water is being depleted faster than it can be recharged. And that's what's happening to the Ogallala Aquifer, where they're mining uranium in our homeland. That water under Mother Earth is glacial melt, 430,000 years ago. That's what we drink. Well, that uranium mining is contaminating it. And it's being depleted faster than it can be recharged. So we're opposing these corporations. It just happens to be uranium mining. It just happens to be tar sands. It just happens to be the heavy haul. Our priority is protecting our sacred drinking water. We didn't sit there and say, oh, that's the world's largest uranium mining producer. Let's fight them. We didn't say that. We didn't know who they were. We just knew somebody was over there using an enormous amount of water and had punctured 10,000 holes through the aquifer. So we're working to stop them to protect our water for our children and our grandchildren. Now there's something wrong with corporations who believe their rights are more important than your right to water, or my right to water, or your right to have reproductive health. There's something wrong in the world when these corporations are given the right to think that they have more rights than we do, as pitiful two-legged that we are. We're all pitiful two-legged people. So we fight these corporations, and we've been fighting them however we can. And what we find is they disrespect our rights as human beings. We have the human right to water. We have our treaty rights as the Lakota Nation. We entered a treaty with the United States, which was ratified by the government in 1868, which we retained a land base and we retained certain rights. The corporation, with the government's help, is disrespecting and violating those treaty rights and our human rights. So, with thinking about rights, and Teofasin touched on it briefly, I really believe Mother Earth has rights too. Some countries around the world are passing the rights of Mother Earth. I don't know how that would fly in this country. I'm hoping the people of the country would embrace that. I believe they would. I don't know what the government would do. Right now, it seems to me there's a separation between the government and the people. The people feel one way, but the government is going in another way. We were very thankful that President Obama stopped the Keystone XL pipeline from entering into this country, and it is stopped. TransCanada, as a corporation, tried to build it. They're still trying to figure out ways to get it into the country. I don't know how that'll work. But I wanted to say that a long time ago, I'll tell you a little quick story here. Our people were camped out on the plains, deep winter, heavy snow, very cold. Everyone was in the lodge and watching as this man comes, lost, wandering. come into our camp meeting and see us. He was starving, he was lost, he was hungry, he smelled bad because he didn't shower for a long time. Our people had fat. It was a prized possession, very rare because buffaloes, elk, deer, your wild game does not have fat, just cows have fat. So fat was a good medicine for us. We had particular uses for it. Sometimes we could light a little fire at night with that, mixed it with some recipes. We hung it in belly bags or bladder bags of buffalo or other four-legged. And then we tie it in a tree. This is our teoshpai now, remember? All of our relatives living together. Maybe 80, 100 lodges. Here he comes, and he smells it, and he finds it, and he takes it. And he doesn't just take one, he takes it all. And he's stuffing it in his mouth, and he's happy to live, and simple to eat. So he takes all our bags of fat that all of our women worked all summer to preserve for our people to get through 6 months of winter, and he goes away, and he takes our fat. So we named him Washiju, and that means fat taker. One who thinks of himself, he wanted to eat. He didn't think, wow, there's 300 people over there. Of course he didn't see us, but somewhere in his head he had to have known somebody prepared this food. This is somebody's. Maybe I'll just take one bag. But no, he took it all, thinking only of himself. He wants to eat, he wants to live. He took all the fat. So his name is Washiju, and it just happened to be a white man. But a Washiju could be anybody who's greedy and selfish and petty and vain. We really describe everything. Like I'm the stone that lives forever, you know, and he's the red star, you know. So the first German we ever came across, because they speak so gutturally, speaks harshly. The first Italian we see had long feet, so he's there. All of them now, they're Sikonka, long feet people, right? The Japanese we saw there, Ishta Iyutita, eyes for bad people. So it's not a matter of the color of the skin for Washiju. It's what's in here. It's the greed, the selfishness, the pettiness. That's who we call them. Here they're calling them the 1%. Right? So in this work of protecting our sacred water, fighting corporations, going to jail, climbing barricades, trespassing, putting our bodies in front of heavy halls, going to jail. I'm out on bond right now. These are just some of the things that we do because it's our honor, it's our privilege, it's our obligation, and it's our responsibility to be a good relative. Ujimaka, Inamaka is our relative. That's what Midakuasi means, all my relations. We have another one, prophecy I'll share with you. Bright earth, rise up. So someday the earth will weep. She will cry with tears of blood. You must make a choice. You stand with her and you defend her. For when she dies, you too will die. So crying earth, rise up. Crying earth, rise up. Times up, wise up, rise up. Crying earth, rise up. It's like a prayer for us. So everywhere we go to protect our sacred water, somebody in the audience will always say, well, you know you're against fossil fuel extraction, but what's the alternative? We always get that. We always get that question. So my response as a Lakota woman, as a grandmother, as somebody who wants to live my destiny, if the military is the largest consumer of gas and oil, maybe the alternative is peace.